Good morning, everybody. It's the 11th of August, 2021, and my name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, our second show of the day. Today we have a nice one with my good friends from COSIN. Okay, Eileen Bialystok. Hi, Eileen. I'll bring you in a second. It's been a long time since I saw you, for goodness sakes. Okay, Eileen is the Director of Technology and Information in Nauset, Massachusetts Public Schools. And then we have Pete Just, our old friend from, hi, Pete, I'll bring you on in a minute, from Wayne Township in Indiana. Okay, he's CTO over there for the school district of Wayne Township. We're going to talk about what COSIN sees as the challenges now and what they're planning to help with for next year. All right, and we'll get into all those topics as we go through this, but it is important because we've seen this year how important ed tech, and we know how important that is, but proper networking, proper broadband, et cetera, how important these things are, and it all boils down to an equity question. We got to make sure every kid and every teacher and every school is covered, all right, that they get full access to everything they need. It's just equity and inclusion. That's all we're talking about here. We're going to archive the show right at our website at our Consortium for Equity over at ace-ed.org. Go over there. You'll enjoy our magazine, which is called Equity and Access Pre-K-12. Everything we do over there is free at ace-ed.org. We'd love you to join with us as we do all kinds of things for equity, okay, within public schools all over the country. It's just so darn important these days. All right, please go over in this podcast, like all our podcasts, we'll be over there at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on my two guests today. We'll start with Eileen. Eileen, hello, it's Larry.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. It's nice to see you, or at least hear from you.
Yeah.
I'm actually in San Diego for the ASU-GSV conference.
Oh, good for you. Well, thank you. It's 7:30 in the morning there. Thanks for getting up so early. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I'm more than happy to.
Well, and I just have to ask, you know, with COVID and conferences and all that sort of thing, how's the conference going?
It's going very well. We all have to have our rapid test and our proof of vaccination, and masks are happening. And it's really been great because we really need to connect with people in person, and we're doing it in a really safe way.
Good enough. And are they having regular seminars and all that sort of thing? What's going on?
Yes, sessions and, you know, nightly, daily events. So it's just like a regular conference, except, you know, we're wearing masks.
Good enough. Good enough. And just stay safe out there. Okay. I know a lot of people went, but I know a lot of people who decided not to go because they were still a little worried about the pandemic. Okay. So I'm glad you're feeling safe out there is my point. Okay. And I'm glad it's going so well out there. Pete, good morning to you. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Eileen, go ahead.
I was just laughing.
Oh, okay, good enough. Pete, good morning to you in Indiana.
Good morning, Larry.
How are you today?
I am doing great. I'm kind of wishing I was out there with Eileen. I didn't get to go because we actually have started school and on our third week now. So.
You're kidding. I didn't realize Indiana
busy schools
were back this early. That surprised me.
Yeah, we have, we went to a balanced calendar over a decade ago. So, we do get some time off during the course of the year, which works out great for our students and staff, getting a little bit of a break there in the fall and spring, but more than normal. It's worked out well for us. But, we're fully into it now, and so far so good. We're hoping that we don't have to go the route we did last year.
Yeah, well, let's all hope that. And when you say a balanced calendar, I am unfamiliar with exactly that term. Can you tell me what that means?
Yeah, well, we have about 7 weeks of summer, and then we get 2 weeks off in October and 2 weeks off in typically April of every year. And, of course, we get 2 weeks off in December. So basically what we're doing, it's not a full year calendar because we do have 7 weeks off in the summer. But we have these larger breaks, and what we found is that really has helped the students and the staff get a little bit of a breather in the fall and the spring, and they come back refreshed and finish each semester strong that way.
Well, nice, and I wish you well with it. I'm glad that's working out so well. And while I've got you, okay, talk about back to school in Wayne Township, Indiana, with COVID. What's happening?
Well, here in Indiana, numbers are going up, as you saw. As a matter of fact, here in our school district, today is the first day that we're all fully masked again. That was a requirement for certain parts of the district up until yesterday, but not, you know, if you had a vaccine, then you didn't have to mask, and now we're masking everyone just to try to try to manage the cases, and also, you know, obviously quarantine has become a thing again. We had about 400 students in quarantine in the last couple of weeks, and so, yeah, it's what everyone else is seeing. We're kind of seeing the same thing. So that's where we stand right now in terms of that. But at this point, we're trying to deal with it in other ways to try to help with contact tracing and trying to simplify the things we did last year, but also be very cognizant of all the concerns that everyone has right now.
Since everybody's masked, I'll tell you about a company I found out about. I really love this. It's called Clear Mask. And it's a clear mask, or theclearmask.com. And they're masks that are totally safe but allow you to see the face of the person. Okay? You know, it's a typical mask, but it's clear. All right?
So we have kindergarten and elementary teachers using that,
I was just going to say that in elementary school, especially where there's so much of a connection between the kids and the teachers, okay, it's nice to see everybody smiling, okay, and well protected. I just think that company's so cool. I wanted to share that with you. And Ellen, same thing for Nauset. If they want to check that out, I don't know what's going on. You guys are down on the, near the Cape, right? Nauset.
Yeah, we are on the Cape, right?
Yeah,
at the elbow.
Yeah, and you go up the elbow. You go up to the elbow, to the wrist, and beyond. And you're talking about Provincetown, which had that serious breakout a few months ago. And so just be careful, okay, when you get back there, because, you know, being in Maine, or I do love the Cape, so let's keep it in mind. So, Eileen, let me start with you, okay? What's going on with COSIN, top of mind? And you're out there at ASU. What's top of mind as a person from COSIN? What's going on? Top of mind.
I think the biggest thing we're dealing with is the influx of money coming into us, and you know, how do we manage it, and how do we sustain it longer term?
Well, I can tell you, you take the money, you go to the Coronado Hotel for 4 months, just you. keep ordering martinis and pina coladas, okay? Just one idea,
Then you get an orange jumpsuit after that.
Yeah, seriously, right? But yeah, we're all trying to figure out how can we you know, keep this up and sustain all the programs and the devices going forward once this all this money starts drying up in a couple of years.
And it will. It will, indeed. And what about you, Pete? What's top of mind? Okay, and obviously safety is top of mind, but we're talking about school networking.
Sure.
Okay, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, and I'd say, you know, obviously sustainability, all of our dollars, we're making sure that every single one of them is spent in a way that is sustainable. And, you know, if it is for people, it's clear that this is a two-year project to try to get students back up to speed. But, you know, when I look at the COSIN network, the things I've seen a lot is a lot of conversation about ECF. The filing window, of course, closes in 2 days. So
right.
There's been a lot of hubbub about that, speaking about money with the connectivity fund. And then really just starting school and distributing devices. And a big thing has been equity and connectivity. There's been a pretty significant set of key findings in the home connectivity study that COSIN did with Chan Zuckerberg and Anive. Really a lot of interesting information that's really helping us as a district kind of make some changes. You know, we distributed MiFis last year based on household, and the findings say that, no, we need to do that based on student because one device for two or three or five students definitely doesn't work. You know, the signal's not great enough, and you don't have enough bandwidth over the month. So there's a lot of big findings that kind of came out of that. And really that video and synchronous learning is what a lot of teachers went to in this remote learning period we had last year. And that just doesn't work real well when you're trying to share a MiFi. Some of this work requires more resources, and obviously, device quality is important too. A lot of times, you know, we purchase the cheapest thing possible. Well, that's not really the best way.
Get what you pay for. Yeah,
you really do. You might not have a good antenna.
Talk about sustainability. Yeah, you can buy the cheapest thing now, but it's like the old Fram oil filter. You can pay me now, or you can pay me later for the whole engine. You know,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that simple. And, you know, you brought up this interesting point of equity and connectivity. All right. And I know you quoted from the COSIN survey, but for both of you, and I know there's a difference in the two school districts. Okay. Pete, just talk about how that was. What did you learn was going on in Wayne Township last year at the height of the pandemic that you've been able to correct in terms of equity and connectivity?
Well,
how was it last year? Yeah, you know what I'm asking.
Yeah, well, one of the things was that we have been very focused on what we call inside the firewall, right? Everything that we've done, you know, these last 10 years, let's call it, of adoption has been all focused on the stuff that happens inside our walls, inside our firewall. And, you know, last year there was nobody inside the firewall. Everyone was at home. Even if we had
good
teachers
planning
in the building, the
yeah
students were
yeah
at home. Yeah, yeah. So that was the big shift for all of us, I think. And trying to be able to help those students from home, trying to be able to support them was a very significant thing. And then what are the cybersecurity implications? You know, when you have people that aren't used to VPN, using VPN and things like that. So a lot of that stuff was brought to the top. And that's what I think a lot of what we've been trying to button down in the last year.
And how you doing? How do you feel about it as you look ahead?
You know, never say we're good, but I think we started moving in a really good direction. And I think we've got some of the big issues figured out, but there's a lot more learning to be done. And it's one of the things we're doing right now is kind of a 12-month look back and reevaluation of what are the things we could do to better serve our community and our students, and especially families. We're much more focused on families now.
Well,
and everyone now has skills that they didn't have before. So, you know, I mean, we had the best attendance in our parent-teacher meetings last year that we've ever had.
I heard that from so many people. It's great. I hate to say great. The pandemic was far from great, but it taught us a number of things and made some things better, and that's one of them. Eileen, how about Nauset as you look back at the height of last year and then as you plan for next year? What did you learn? What are you doing? That sort of thing.
Well, you know, in the summertime, we're a tourist area, but in the wintertime, we're
Cape Cod, everybody.
Fishermen.
Yeah,
Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And so, but our population changes in the winter. It's fishermen, blue-collar workers, small business owners. Mm-hmm. And we have a large Jamaican population on the Cape. And what we have found through the pandemic is there's the have and have nots. And we have students who are able to have connectivity at home or additional devices or devices that are robust enough to support, you know, remote learning. And then we have the students who don't. We also realized that many of our devices were way past end of life. Families that could buy their own devices did, while the students who couldn't were really struggling with, you know, the video conferencing, you know, any of the things they needed to do during remote learning. So we've been really working to make sure that we're providing and I agree with Pete, it's not about the student anymore. It's about supporting our family.
Is that interesting?
It's so
interesting.
You know, and then the connectivity piece, we handed out hotspots and we just finish our survey for the Emergency Connectivity Fund, and we realize how many more families are struggling with, you know, robust connectivity that is sufficient for homework, for online learning. But we also deal with the last mile out on the Cape, which is surprising to me, but we have a lot of families where fiber doesn't go out to them, and you know, we're trying to work with our service providers to actually partner with them to get connectivity and get internet out to these families.
And what are you planning as a return to school? Okay, how are the kids going to return? When do they return? What will it look like?
For us, we don't go back till after Labor Day, so we go back September
7th.
We were lucky that our pre-K through 5 were in school all year, full time. We started off the year with just a regular school year, and our middle and high school were hybrid. They came in a few days. They worked at home for a few days. We're planning on everybody coming back full time in the fall, The governor is making this controversial decision that every school district or every school committee makes their own decision about masking. So it's not a statewide decision.
Right.
It's based on your school committee. But we suspect we're going to be coming back full-time with masks. We are reevaluating, the 3-foot versus 6-foot distance. You know, we're not going to do cohorts anymore. And we're changing how we're classifying close contact and how long people can be quarantined, because we realize that we need to have students and teachers in school earlier than we did with the 14 days. So,
well, it's just everything is so different.
I know.
Yeah.
And that's based on, our health boards in our towns, our nurses. So we're getting the best advice from the best people.
And I'll tell you what you both said. And this, you kind of knew, we all knew this, but the emphasis on families, okay, and their needs at home. And again, that equity issue is the basis of that, okay? That has come to the forefront. Both of you said that independently, and it's just, it's so interesting because it's something you already knew. But now it comes right up to the top. I just found that really interesting, and I think really a gracious change that the pandemic might have brought. There's something interesting going on, and I am very interested in this. Pete, I'm going to go back to you. Social emotional learning, okay, and COSET, again, which is the Consortium of School Networking, okay, do those two things even come together in a Venn diagram or something? How do they overlap? So social emotional learning and again COSET, what COSET does.
Well, it's interesting, right? What we call SEL or social emotional learning is really a top topic. When we did our Driving K-12 Innovation Study, it was a top topic and considered an accelerator for the adoption of technology. So we did some work with Castle, who's the expert in SEL, they worked with us. And what we did was we put together a little kind of executive summary to help school district technology leaders understand how they could help their schools be successful in taking care of the needs of students and helping them work through their challenges. And honestly, right now, as we went through everything we went through in the last 15 months, we really do need to focus on interpersonal relationships. And so essentially, there were four important ways that leaders overseeing ed tech could partner with SEL teams to make sure that there's going to be a high quality implementation of that learning. And those are really quickly kind of helping to create ways to have a two-way communication that build engagement between the SEL team and families and tech teams, and just making sure that we understand what their needs are, helping to find the second thing, interactive platforms that they could kind of use to have better professional learning. SEL can be pretty complicated, and we can't pull together everyone in the same room right now. So what are some platforms we could use to kind of provide the learning, maybe like an LMS? And then also kind of the last two things, promote or kind of proactively support the families and the students. And we kind of got a little bit into that. And how do we promote, supporting families when they're at the homes? Maybe it's through MiFis. Maybe it's through other types of, even assessment tools to help gauge, student agency and things like that. And then finally, kind of helping to collect the data. So that they can evaluate the SEL programs. A lot of times, really, the big problem has been that we don't even know what SEL is, and we don't
even know
that they use technology. Right? And, so it's really coming alongside them to help assure success of those programs.
And how do you think, now that we're getting back to school, okay, how do you think the ed tech side, the networking side, I'm going to ask both of you this, now that we're getting back to school, how will the ed tech side reside in that? Are we now so dying for even more personal contact that the ed tech side will be a little bit less this year? How do you see that, or do you see it as more than ever as we head back?
Go ahead, Eileen.
Ladies and gentlemen, in San Diego, I might add, where it's always room temperature. Go ahead.
I know, it's so pretty here.
I know.
So I see EdTech being important because we want to, SEL is about the health and well-being of not only our students but our staff as well. But it's also looking at that whole child view, looking at discipline records and looking at attendance records and grades and all those things that we have housed in our SIS systems or our other systems that that work within our districts. And I'm finding that I do some research on this, and I'm finding that school districts are using EdTech in ways to support what's going on in the district around SEL. But if you don't have a clear picture of what's going on with students, you're not going to be able to support them with SEL at all. So I think we're becoming critical for districts to have that data available to assess the well-being of, I said, either staff or students. So, and I also have seen programs, I do a lot of research on this, but I also see that programs that were originally designed for special ed about self-regulating, mm-hmm. self-managing, reflection, mm-hmm. Identifying the cause of why they're reacting the way they are now being more mainstream, and they're not being identified as only special ed, but they're being identified as another tool where students can get on their iPad and say, this is how I'm feeling today, and what can I mm-hmm. do to reflect on it, or what action steps can I take to get me to a better place?
That was a great answer. You get an A. Pete only got a B plus on that one. You got an A. Okay.
Yay.
That Pete has some catching up to do here. And you brought up an interesting point. Okay, that the ed tech. Okay, and this is so key, and I love this. Can supply the school districts with, quote, the SEL data that they need to make proper decisions and make sure these kids are okay. Pete, you want to move up to an A? You can agree with me. I'm very easily bought.
Certainly, I agree. That's actually
of
the 4 points.
There you go. You're tied. Yeah. It's really an interesting world. I mean, we have all this technology. And teachers, not just CTOs, teachers have all this technology. And if we literally put all this together, we get an accurate picture of every student using data, not just anecdotal information. Okay?
Right.
And when it's all put together, and especially in this nutsy world, when it's all put together, okay, it could really be helpful. This is very key. I love this. Pete, do you want to continue on this one?
Yeah, I mean, talking about the data, what the report said is really that outcome data and implementation data were the two pieces that really could help SEL continuous improvement the most, because obviously that gives them the feedback of kind of what are the outcomes they're looking for,
yeah.
are they reaching them, and then, what are the actions taking that are influencing the outcomes, the implementation data. So if we can find things along those lines, whether they're assessments or self-assessments or what have you, that's the stuff that can really help improve those SEL programs. So that there is a role that we play as tech leaders
yeah.
in being able to help them be successful with those programs.
So the next question is your guidance counselors, your school counselors, your therapists, et cetera, okay, and your educators. Do they understand the power of the EdTech data in SEL, which is at the forefront of every school district these days, SEL? Are we getting the point across to them that here's the stuff you need to really make the great decisions? Eileen?
I don't think they do, but I don't think that necessarily EdTech is there yet. We have all these systems, and we're still struggling with interoperability. I think once teachers and guidance counselors have a one-stop shop to be able to aggregate the data and look at it in real time, that they won't understand it. Right now, it's we have these be nice programs in school, and that seems to be where SEL
yeah.
started, and now we're moving into it. But I think it's our job as EdTech leaders to make sure that we're pulling all the assessments and all the other programs that we're using into a format that it's easy for them to use. I can't expect them to go into the SIS system and pull up information. I need to make sure I provide them with a
right.
one-button, one-click option to
right.
see everything they need to see to support their child. So I don't think we're quite there yet. But we're moving in the right direction, so.
Well, I hope so, but I assume you're putting chips into the vaccines to make sure that happens. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Correct. Might be correct. Greg,
okay,
just kidding, everybody.
Another
no letters, just kidding. Okay, no, seriously, this SEL is so top of mind for every school district, and I really hadn't put the two things together until this conversation, okay? How important all this is, okay, to making the right decisions and learning about who we work with, okay? It's just so darn important. I just really love this conversation and conversations where it's going. So all that said, okay, interoperability, we talked a lot about that last year. We also talked about privacy, okay? And now that was top of mind, so to speak, for the ed tech world, okay, and security, all right? So all that's good, but now we've been through a pandemic, okay? So as you talk to your fellow CTAs, okay, what's the big significant change for you? Okay, Pete.
So
significant change.
The big significant change is that thing we kind of started talking about a little bit, which is support of the home. Number one, homework is more digital.
Yeah.
You know, with more digital homework comes more dependence on technology. And, you know, as the chief academic officers adopt those tool sets, you know, for us to be at their side to kind of help them understand, hey, this works, ties in nicely with our, you know, interop efforts, you know, maybe IMS Global and the LMS, that type of thing, or it doesn't, you know, having more, you know, input and also having, you know, a tighter conversation around that, I think, has become more essential now. And also just, you know, we've learned that, you know, you need to be able to support students that are working from the home. And you can't do that the same way you support them in the buildings. You know, there's no desk to come
up
to.
Like you said,
nobody's
behind the wall. Nobody was behind the wall. Everybody was
outside
of the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. So we started doing chat. You know, we bought a chat platform. And so you go to a site, go through some FAQs. And if those don't answer it, why don't you chat with one of our staff members and let's get the answer to you. You know, it's a way that it doesn't really matter where you are. We can help you. It doesn't have to be a physical desk anymore.
Right, that is very cool. Eileen, what's your thoughts on that, the biggest change?
Around security?
Yeah, no. Since, from what it was, you mentioned the word, I think, interoperability and privacy and all that. That was always the first thing that popped out of everybody's brain when I would talk to them about this. That was a year and a half ago, okay, even last year to a certain extent. But this year, would you agree with Pete that involving the family and understanding the needs of the families and reaching out, I'm going to use his quote, beyond the wall, is the biggest thing? Or whatever you think.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with him. And, you know, tying into data privacy is also student safety. You know, we saw that a lot of at home didn't have their Zoom cameras on, or we started to look into their homes to see what was going on in the background. And realizing, you know, that the kids were not in safe environments. And for us, you know, when we gave out these, I'm actually only been in this district a year, so I wasn't there at the end of the COVID, but we were handing out iPads to kids, and we didn't have at-home filtering. You know, we were not, you know, so
exactly.
We're sending devices home with littles and, you know, middle school kids who were going to sites that weren't safe for them. You know, so I think for us, it was more about putting in place, you know, web filtering at home, you know, having constant check-ins with families. I agree with Pete that the connection with families has been incredible. And also looking at student safety programs that allows us to filter, you know, their Google Drive and their Gmail accounts because they're not in front of us. We're not seeing them. We're not seeing what they're accessing or even just that human connection. And students are interesting is when they get online, they're asking a lot of times asking for help. And if we don't know that they're asking for help, then we can't. Then it's a major problem.
It really is. I have to say it. One other thing with all this, okay, in mind, Eileen, stay with me. The ed tech industry, and that has to have changed along with the needs of the schools. All right, how's the industry reacted, in your opinion, to all this?
I think it's better than, in my opinion, better than it was. I just remember when the pandemic started, and all of a sudden, my teachers were getting inundated with free software.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
It was scary. I think the vendors that really value working with school districts are doing a really good job of partnering with us, understanding, you know, our data privacy policies, understanding that you need to work with the tech director and not the teacher when you're
That's a great point.
I think we're getting there. And being at ASUGSD, it's a lot of new companies that are startups that are trying to get out there. And I really I want to have these conversations with them and say, these are the five things or whatever that you really need to take in consideration before you even talk to a district. Because these are the things we're going to ask and we're going to want to know. And if you don't have those in place, you're not a product we're going to even look
That's
at.
That's right. I can't even look at it. You should share that with every single one of them. Pete, what are your thoughts on that, on how the industry's reacted to your needs?
You know, it really was kind of interesting. There was a bunch of freemium stuff there early.
Yeah.
That was so exciting. I mean, we're a Google district, and I was really pleased with how they responded to really the needs, to the point that Eileen was making earlier, kind of adding features to the software, like in Google Meet, to really help situations to kind of manage the different types of you could have backgrounds and things like that. There were a lot of adjustments made pretty quickly. And then in terms of the bigger picture of the entire EdTech kind of services industry and software industry, I think they tried to pivot. I think that they did as good a job as we could have, given no advance warning. And I know that they ramped up really well. I think overall the response was very good.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was too. And I guess my question really is, they all reacted well, and they all had the best of intentions, et cetera, et cetera. I couldn't agree with that more than 100% that I do. Okay, but now after 2 years of this, we, as you folks mentioned, things have changed a bit. Okay,
yeah.
And I love what Ellen said. You got to go through the CTO, not the teacher, because it's not the Wild West. They work for a school district. Okay, that's so darn important to say right off the bat. Okay, and it's not only to make the sale, but to make the sale work and sustainable, that sort of thing. All right, but your needs have changed. How do you look at, as you look at the industry now? Not with all the good stuff they did when it started. Do you see a change?
You know what?
I think
they need to focus more on interoperability. I mean, why is everything not in our LMS? I mean, for heaven's sakes, we've been using an LMS for 20 years. Let's get the stuff in there. If we're buying digital resources, let's put them in there so it's easy for staff and students. I don't understand why we're not doing a better job at that. So that would be my big challenge is, you know, let's get up to speed with standards and get those digital resources into our learning management systems.
Well said. Well said, and I couldn't agree with you more. And I don't know why, like you said, after all these years of ed tech, why that isn't part and parcel, okay, of everything they're doing. This fits in with everything, so to speak. Great stuff. You guys are so smart. I love having you on. Okay, you both got an A, by the way. Congratulations. A+. I'm giving
Thanks,
you an A.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay?
Thanks, Larry.
No problem. Eileen, have fun out there, okay? And I'm going to give you something to do. You're in San Diego. Trust me on this. If they're still open, there's a breakfast and lunch restaurant called Richard Walker's. It's right downtown.
Okay.
Trust me on this, okay? Richard Walker's.
Okay.
If you're still open, drop everything else you're doing and go over there. Okay?
Enjoy it,
Eileen. I'm on my way right now.
Yeah, do it. Do it. And Pete, you take care of all those kids out there, okay? You're doing a great job.
We will do.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Larry. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Richard Walker's, like Walker Brothers in Chicago, everybody. Okay, I'm telling you, great stuff out there. If they're still open, I hope he is. Okay, Eileen Bellestock and Pete Just from Inorset, Mass, and Wayne Township, Indiana, respectively. Cosins at Cosin.org. There ain't nobody better in the universe to get things done than Cosin.org for pre-K-12 ed tech and networking. I can tell you that right now. All right, so go over there, check it out, and check out what we do, where this show is going to be archived over at ace-ed.org. That's us. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.